Edward Snowden's reemergence today at Moscow's Sheremetyevo Airport was not quite a public appearance. Snowden met with activists he himself had invited. That was little consolation for the legions of reporters who've been staking out the airport's transit zone for 3 weeks, hoping to catch a glimpse of the fugitive intelligence analyst. The Canadian Broadcasting Corporation spoke to three of those journalists about what it's been like waiting for Snowden.
I'm Miriam Elder. I'm the Guardian's Moscow correspondent.
My name is Andrew Roth. I'm a reporter for the Moscow Bureau of the New York Times.
Lydia Kelly, and I'm a macroeconomics correspondent for Reuters in Moscow, Russia. In total, I spent about 58 to 60 hours at the Moscow Sheremetyevo Airport.
30 hours at the airport?
30 hours in the airport.
The transit area comprises of three terminals that are connected together. And
two of them are like you would think about a modern airport, really very nice, airy.
You've got like duty-free shops, there's a Burger King, there's a TGI Friday.
At some point there was this Radio Monte Carlo playing this disco-like music at 6 o'clock in the morning.
They were playing a song from the new Daft Punk album, which is cool.
That's D and E, and F is the entire opposite.
It's pretty grim. It's part of the airport that hasn't been really renovated since Soviet times.
It looks like it's made out of a black or dark granite. It's cavernous. There's a lot of doors.
There's lots of little corridors, lots of little rooms.
It's definitely the feeling that there's a lot of, like, secret tunnels.
A lot of places where somebody could be hiding.
And their ordinary people cannot access.
And the whole thing is 2 kilometers end to end.
That you can just spend all night walking back and forth. And let me tell you, sometimes walking back and forth is what keeps you from falling asleep at 4 or 5 a.m.
It was impossible to know where to be. Walking from one terminal to another terminal to another terminal.
It was whispering, you know, Edward, basically, to people who walked by you.
Most of all, you keep scanning people. You keep
looking in all the stalls in the bathroom. That's really how you pass the time, is scouring and searching the airport in a way that you've never really looked around an airport before.
You don't even know what you're looking for. You know you're looking for a guy with glasses.
I thought that I had good understanding what Edward Snowden looked like. But when you're tired at 5 a.m. and you haven't slept for many hours, you suddenly realize that Edward Snowden looks like an ordinary man, and a lot of men have the same type of glasses, the same type of face.
The way that you felt from the very beginning was anxious that he would walk by you. You know, you always think one more patrol, one more walk through the airport, and maybe this time when I walk around the corner, he'll be right there.
The second day, for example, I planned to leave around 8 p.m. Every time I kind of took steps to go towards the exit, I just had this feeling, oh no, the second I leave, he's going to show up at Burger King.
Burger King was in the geographical center of the three terminals.
So I ended up staying there that night until 2 in the morning, just unable to leave.
No sign of Snowden. Nope.
We took everything as a sign that Snowden could be there. So at one point, a woman walked by with a tray, and on this tray there were 3 plates of food, and we were convinced that it was for Snowden, for his traveling companion, and maybe for, you know, an FSB minder or something like that.
I was walking down a hallway, and the police officer looks up and sees me, and he turns around on his heels and starts walking the other way. He walks into this small room, and he closes the door behind him. And I realized, and I decided at that moment, that that was the room where Edward Snowden was being held. I was sure. I found a couple other people later on, and we walked back down the hallway. We basically opened the door. One person looked in and said, oh, I'm so sorry. We didn't mean to. And it was just a room with one police officer standing there.
There was a particular moment the first night, and there was this young-looking man coming into the capsule hotel with a woman. It was about 3 a.m. in the morning, and I was like, excuse me, what is your name? Isn't it Edward? And he says, no, I'm Paul and I'm sick. And they took him into the capsule hotel, and 5 minutes later the ambulance comes in and takes him away, but he's all hooded and all covered, and you kind of think, man, did I just miss the man?
And then just a little while later, this guy walked by who was kind of heavy and definitely in his 60s, maybe in his 70s, and Lydia had been in the airport for so long at that point that she just kind of looked at him and was like, is that Julian Assange? And that was just when we realized that a lot of us were losing it.
To get into the transit area, yes, you have to buy a ticket.
We just bought, you know, the cheapest ticket to anywhere.
You say, well, do you have a ticket to Kiev in the next half hour? And she says, no, well, but we have a ticket to Belgrade. You say, that sounds great.
And could I buy round trip ticket to Havana from myself for tomorrow from Moscow? And the woman looks at me and says, are you crazy? How are you getting back here from Belgrade? And I'm like, I have my ways.
And, you know, you have to leave somehow. You have to leave through some kind of passport control. So
you would have to explain yourself when you tried to get out of the airport without having flown anywhere.
And you were there for 33 hours. You missed your plane 32 hours ago.
The woman who was to check my passport said, oh, what happened? Why did you miss your flight? And so long ago.
What kind of excuse am I going to give them?
I told them I'd met a couple of friends and we started drinking and just missed the flight.
Well, you know, I ran into a friend.
We haven't seen each other for 14 years.
And we just got drunk.
Then we got drunk.
And here I am, and I'd like to go home.
Yes, you and 100 other journalists.
To which they said, were you looking for somebody? I mean, we decided the gig was up. We said, yes, we were looking for somebody. And he kind of smiled and he says, you won't find him, but I see him all the time. And we could never really quite tell if it was a joke or if it was true that he had seen Snowden there, but we couldn't get any answers out of him.
Leaving the airport without having seen Snowden is frustrating, but with distance now, it's kind of understandable.
It was always a long shot when we went there.
The idea that he could have been just wandering around this airport with just like a normal person is kind of a ridiculous thing to have ever thought.
I think a lot of us hoped at one point that he would leave, basically, because searching the airport for him has been one of the futile, I think, would you would say, process at certain points.
Because we just, you know, was constantly chasing a ghost.
Well, maybe those three reporters will get lucky. That was Desperately Seeking Snowden, featuring The Guardian's Miriam Elder, Lydia Kelly from Reuters, and The New York Times' Andrew Roth. The piece was produced by Dominic Girard and originally aired on the CBC's Day 6 program. Thanks again.